If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now.
I love your show. I just love it.
He calls it as he sees it.
So my daughter turned me on to you, and you're awesome.
Live from the Palm Springs iHub.
You know, as a businessman, I spend my entire day, I work hard for the, you know, make money for my family. So I don't have the time to invest and to know what's going on, you know. And that's why I listen to your show, because you tell it exactly the way it is.
This is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Russ Betts Show. We got an hour in the bank, and we're heading on into hour two. Lots going on. You can listen on podcast, and thank you, Google. They make it easy. Just type in the Russ Betts Show podcast, and you can find it from there, and that saves me having to rattle off a big, long list of email or website address. Now, jobless claims in the state have hit 30 million, according to the last bit that I'm looking at here. And that's around 18% of the workforce. And when they interviewed, Gavin Newsom, he's talking, Labor Secretary Julie Sue. She said they're paying out $1 billion a day in unemployment insurance claims. That's just a staggering amount. And they've had 3.5 million people file for unemployment insurance. And just to put that in perspective, that's already more than they had in all of 2019, and everybody hasn't finished filing yet. And, of course, then you have business owners who are sitting at home who haven't got anything yet. Everything they've been promised hasn't come through. They could only start to file on April 28th, and most of them haven't seen a thing going. So we have got with us on the line Joe Wallace from the Coachella Valley Economic Partnership. And Joe, welcome to the Russ Betts Show. Glad to have you here, and certainly have some questions for you.
Here to be here on a Sunday morning, Russ, and it's a beautiful one. I've already done my 5-mile walk, trying to keep my health up during this pandemic. And, you know, there's a lot of people out enjoying it. So, maybe we're taking care of things.
Well, I notice a lot of people are out walking these days. I've certainly have seen a lot more of my neighbors. They're all walking. They aren't wearing masks, surprisingly, but they're outside. They figure they don't need them. Who knows? All right. So
I carry one with me. And that's just so other people are not uncomfortable if they see me coming. I don't have any fear of another human being that's 20 feet away, unless he's got a gun on me, then I might.
Yeah, well, my wife and I, we've been wearing them since February, before it was even when the CDC was still telling people, no, don't wear a mask. Anyhow, they changed their tune. So you heard me mention these jobless claims, 30 million. And the number, $1 billion a day in uninsurance claims, that's pretty staggering, isn't it?
That's it's a number bigger than I've ever had to count to. I know how, but I don't know that I have a life long enough to count to it by one.
Okay, so the state have that much money? They have $1 billion. Is that all coming out of federal?
I think that 30 million number is a nationwide number.
Yeah, the 30 million unemployed.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the whole nation. And the state, as I understand it, a large amount of that is going to get backstopped by the Fed.
Okay, so you got 3.3 million Californians have filed unemployment in 4 weeks.
Yep, and getting, what do they get, about 1,000 a week these days, most of them. If you look at the extra 600 that's going through from now through end of July, so, just add 3 zeros to that, and that's what the state has to come up with every week.
And I've talked to a couple of them, and they realize that while those benefits are nice, they run out in July unless they're extended, right?
That's exactly right.
So it's
never been that they've never done that before. I think most all of us have at one time in our life been on unemployment for something. And, the time I was is $300 and something a week. And, an extra 600 on top of this when I was young, that'd have been more than I was making. I wouldn't have been interested in going back to work. And, we've got a little bit of problem with that right now as some things start reopening. The workers don't want to come back because they'll have to take a pay cut.
Well, I talked to a restaurant owner who said when he gets ready to reopen, when they allow him to reopen, he's going to call them back. And, in fact, he wants some of them to come in now. And he says, well, they're refusing to come in. And he says, well, I just want you to know that when I fill out my unemployment paperwork, your name is going down as refused to work. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to get in trouble with the state trying to cover for you. So
that's exactly right.
All right, so you're on a task force that basically is helping try and get some protocols in place. Is that what I understand? To when we do allow businesses to open up, how they do that or when they do that? Can you fill us in on that a little bit, please?
Sure. The intention for the task force, and I assume you're talking about the countywide one that was on the front page of the paper, I think, yesterday.
Yes.
That our mission is to put together processes through which each business vertical will have instructions about what would be best practices to open. So for a restaurant, you know, there'll be, you know, we'll make suggestions. This is the best way to reopen a restaurant, given the spacing requirements that we have right now. And now the owner is not going to be under any legal reason to have to do anything that we say. We're just trying to put together a good way for each type of business sector to open in a way that will be safe. And, you know, if we have all state guidelines, we'd try to make them work with state guidelines. But I don't think there's a lot of that out there right now. But what we're really hoping to do in Riverside County is to give the governor, Governor Newsom, enough confidence that there's a leadership group that is advising businesses how to open safely. And if he has enough confidence, then maybe we can get the next step, which is, you know, one size doesn't fit all in a state that's 1,000 miles long. You know, to have, what's that, Jefferson, whatever they call it, Northern California, up north of the Emerald Triangle, and the Coachella Valley, to be judged by the same metrics and the same set of rules, you know, that makes about as much sense as judging New York City by Texas.
Yeah, we saw that in
Texas
some of the
by New York City. Yeah.
We saw some of that in the news accounts came out, small cities saying, you know, we've had no cases and our businesses are hurt. And in fact, some of the cities are just saying they're opening up. So what's the, all right, so we're getting all this planning in place. What's the sentiment? Can you get any sentiment of the group? You know, is it like,
well, this,
are
this
we months away?
We're not going to try and tell the governor, gee, we're going to open up on Wednesday, or, you know, if you don't tell us by Wednesday, we're doing it anyway. We're not going to get into the ultimatum business. What we're wanting to do is to be competent to a level that the governor trusts Riverside County to open up. You know, so it would be called getting a variance. You know, for instance, all of the talk of, will the heat blunt the growth of this virus? So the Coachella Valley's hot. I mean, we're the oven of the nation in the summer, and we just came through 10 days in a row where we hit 100 every day, and our numbers are, our deaths, we've had 2 deaths in 10 days, and both of them had been infected before the heat came. So that's got to mean something. And, so, you know, so maybe we get some of our businesses to open up earlier, and to do so safely.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, so the idea is to put the protocols in place to get the governor so he's comfortable that we can open up sooner than maybe his ideas for the rest of the state.
Yes, exactly. And we're not alone. There'll be other jurisdictions, other counties, other regions who want to open up sooner. You know, so one part of Riverside County has wineries, and you know, they want their tasting rooms open because that's where they sell cases of wine instead of bottles of wine. And there's a certain protocol that if they follow it, you know, if everybody shows up and gets out of the same car, let that group go to their table, and maybe then the next group comes in, their table's 10 feet away, and then that group can go to that table. But the idea of then, you know, 4 people getting out of the same car and then busting apart into four tables, each of which is 8 or 9 feet apart, that doesn't even make sense, you know, because these people arrive together in the same vehicle. And, you know, often they live together in the same home. But you would want to segregate them from the next car full of people. So that kind of thought process is what we're going through.
Okay, so now you're aware, as everybody else is, that there's a lot of businesses out there that are in very serious financial straits. And some of these, if you can understand the governor's four-stage plan, are off on stage three. Some are on stage four. I think stage four is mostly for the large events. But stage three, is that weeks away or is it months away? Because the Sacramento Bee was out with a story saying anybody who's a business in stage three is months away from opening. And so that would be your hair salons and some other businesses. They're going, hey, I'm not going to survive that long.
That's exactly right. And our hope, you know, it's not our expectation, but it's our hope that we can show ways for even those kinds of businesses that can open. You know, you take a hair salon. Maybe you have to make an appointment and you're the only one in the place for an hour and then you leave and then the next person comes in for an hour. But that gives that stylist, you know, they can work 6, 8, 10 times a day and start making a living.
You realize that for a lot of salons, that would be the normal amount of customers in a day, 8 to 10. So 1 an hour is normal. And so here, you know, if that's the protocol, and I'm sorry, we've got a hair salon. We know the subject well. And, you know, I did submit a list of protocols for, you know, salon opening. I don't know, did that get presented?
It did, yes. And that's one of the verticals that we'll be working on.
Okay, good. But we had a whole bunch of
salon. It was actually a pretty good document you provided, too. I thought it was well thought out. You know, this may turn out to be, you know, something that we present to either the governor or some surrogate to try and make that happen.
Well, that wasn't me. I'm not all that smart. We got together with all the cosmetologists, and I'm not a cosmetologist. My job is sweeping the floor and folding towels when I'm down there.
But that's Mrs. Betts, is that it?
Yeah. So they came up with those protocols to put in place. I think a lot of people don't realize that in a salon already, is very stringent sterilization of tools. It's basically on order of a doctor's office or a dentist office. So they're sitting there going, you know, I'm safer than what we see going on out there in the grocery stores. And I guess that's what people can't understand is they see stuff going on in the stores and all these crowds of people, and there they are. It's like a florist. A florist is sitting in their shop closed looking at this business out there. And they can't open, but they see people streaming in and out of a grocery store. Like, you know, where is the concern for the safety? And why am I closed and they're not? Sorry, I'm getting off on a little bit of a rant there.
Yeah, well, the grocery stores sell flowers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they are, you know, that one little corner right up in the front where, you know, when you're checking out, they've got flowers there. They're competing with the florist.
Joe, can you stay with us through the break?
Sure.
Okay. All right. We're going to be back with Joe Wallace from the Coachella Valley Economic Partnership and also Riverside County Task Force on Reopening Businesses. And I see some of your questions coming in here by email. We'll get to those. And this is the Russ Betts Show on iHub Radio. Back with more.
Live from Palm Springs.
Hey, everyone, listen to this, please.
10 years ago, you know, this was a thriving, booming economy, but we're not going to that extent. This thing isn't a total crash.
I want to tell you, you got the radio voice, my friend.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
Wow, that's really honorable.
Now, here's Russ Betts on iHub Radio.
All right. We're here with Joe Wallace from Coachella Valley Economic Partnership, who during good economic times does a whole lot to help entrepreneurs at every stage of business, from incubation to launch. Very valuable. Of course, not a lot going on in the economy right now. We're in a crash. And so we're talking to Joe about a task force that he sits on, which is geared towards trying to get some businesses open. Joe, I had a question come in on email. It's this person owns a thrift store, and they said they haven't had any help. They're having a hard time getting open, and their question is, well, when can we open? That's going to be the question, I think, everybody.
Well, this task force is not one that's going to tell them when they can open. What we will be concentrating on is trying to come up with a way to tell them how to do it when the state clears them to open. And through having these plans in place, we're hoping to get variances from the state from this one-size-all approach that they have been working with. And, you know, one-size-fits-all right now is nobody does anything, and we're, I guess, technically on shelter-in-place orders that don't have an end date. You see, remember the county pushed its end date to June 16 or 19, something like that, the other day, and then turned around and rescinded it. But now that we're going to be going off of the state, which, to my knowledge, doesn't have an end date yet. So,
no, they got four stages. They got four stages. Everybody's looking at.
Right, yeah, exactly. But there's nothing that says on the fourth stage is we're in it come July 1. There's nothing there that says that.
All right. So
there's nothing. Yeah. So I don't know when the guy can open.
Okay. How many meetings have you had on the task force?
We have had three. And there's another one tomorrow. There's another one Tuesday, and that's to our output will be to the supervisors who are going to vote on going, you know, rescinding everything that Riverside County has done, and relying completely on the state to be told when to reopen.
Okay. So there's no grass growing under your feet. They're meeting. This isn't like meet once a month, and you know.
No. It's two hours every afternoon until we've accomplished what we want to.
Well, that's encouraging. That's good. Every afternoon.
We don't have a damn. We can't sit around and meet once a month and do anything good. You just go and burn somebody's business down if you want to move at that kind of speed.
That's the other email that came in. It says, "Hey, you guys can plan all you want. I'm not going to be here when you're done."
You know, and that's the reality. So CVEP is going to be issuing an economic impact from COVID for the Coachella Valley, specifically done for out here. It's coming out tomorrow. And, you know, one of the things that we read, and I'm sure you've heard of Friedrich Hayek, you know, it's a very famous economist from Germany, but there's a Hayek Institute has predicted that 30% of the businesses in the world will not reopen.
Wow, that's huge.
And out here, yeah, it is. Out here, there's a little under 16,000 businesses registered in the Coachella Valley, and that's anything from one person working out of their house up through, you know, the hospitals that have several thousand employees. But there's nearly 16,000 businesses, and 30% of those going under would mean 5,000 businesses lost.
Wow. How many businesses do you think were told to close or closed on their own that probably don't need to be closed because they qualify as a essential business? Has anybody done any survey on that?
No, but it's way less than half are considered essential, you know, but it wouldn't be less than half of the jobs. So schools are closed. That's one of the biggest employers. Yet they're working from home. They're trying to do something to teach the kids, and I don't know how good that's going. I suspect there's a lot of kids missing their lessons. Hospitals are open. They're essential. I guess police and fire are essential. How about your city workers in DHS? Are they working? Are they,
yeah,
being sent home to work? What are you doing?
Some are in and some are out. We're trying to do a split shift so not everybody's exposed at the same time. I think that's probably going to change once things open up again. I don't know where that one is. There's nobody laid off right now from city. I'm talking about the business I'm talking about is you got a thrift store. I mean, Staples stationery store can be open, but a small thrift store that also sells stationery supplies was told to close. Can they open?
I don't believe they legally can right now, according to the state, but you know, there's some of that going on. The big ad in the back of the Desert Sun this morning that this fancy furniture store on El Paseo is open.
Wow.
And, of course, they're, you know, not cleared by the state to do it either. We'll see. I think I'll go drive by there and see if they send the Gestapo to shut them down.
Well, Mathis Furniture did the same thing down in Indio. So, all right.
Yeah, and if one can, the other can, I guess. That's
Joe, I really appreciate you being on the show, and it's really good to hear this task force is so active and so busy and focused on you know, getting something to the governor so we can get reopened. So thank you for being on.
All right. Thank you, Russ.
All right. You have yourself a good rest of the day, and we're going to continue here on the Russ Bet Show on iHub Radio when we get back.
Thank you for educating so many of us. I think you're the best.
We are the people in your neighborhood.
With great power comes great responsibility.
This is the Russ Betts Show.
All right, well, welcome back. Hey, fancy that. There is some other news besides the coronavirus COVID-19. We're going to get to a little bit of that now. And Rancho Mirage had an election. There's election news. And Ted Weil and Richard Kite have officially won the election and will hold on to their seats on the Rancho Mirage City Council. They were challenged by Maggie Lockridge and Stephen Jaffe. 10,859 votes cast in that election, and Weil and Kite won handily, although it was a decent showing for the other two challengers. So it's never always a total blowout. Those were only two seats up for grabs in that election. And as you can imagine, they had to change their campaign strategy. That's going through everybody's minds. You know, normally it's called walk and knock. I kind of have a feeling you show up at somebody's door knocking, you ain't going to be too welcome. So candidates aren't doing that. And candidates used to stand out in front of, you know, the market or get out and have big rallies. And, well, in the height of this stay-at-home orders, you had candidates out there figuring out how the heck are they going to, you know, what campaign strategies are they going to employ. So, well, of course, it all went digital and social media and email rather than the face-to-face contact. So congratulations, Ted Weil and Richard Kite in Rancho Mirage. There you go. All right, there is, you know, we keep hearing about these planning commissioners getting in trouble. Last week, we talked about a planning commissioner who was on one of these Zoom meetings. His cat ends up on his desk, and he takes a cat and throws it across the room to a big thud and gasp of everybody else on, and, well, the city council got rid of him. Well, now we got another planning commissioner who's ousted for his social media contents, and what he suggested was that the sick, the old, the homeless people should be left to meet their natural course in nature during the coronavirus pandemic. The city council members in Antioch, California, weren't real happy with that. You know, he said his free speech rights allow him to say what he wants on his own time and should not reflect his commission position. He's making a big pitch about them free speech rights, but I think the city council that appointed him has some free speech rights also. And they said, you're out. He, in case you're wondering exactly what he said his exact quote is that we will fix, coronavirus will fix what is a significant burden on our society and free up resources that can be used for other things. So he later deleted the post, but he refused to resign and did not back down from his comments. And Mayor Steve Wright said, politicians are held to a higher standard by representing the city, and that suggesting that it's a good thing that homeless people are killed by the coronavirus is not a good thing, and I would say so. So I got a call. That's just a little interesting story. I came up, you know, I got a call from a resident. I'm a city council member in the city of Desert Hot Springs. So I get calls like this about some dumping out in the desert. And they said a whole big pile of fluorescent tubes were dumped out on, of all places, to the entrance of Mission Creek Preserve, to the entrance from our city into Mission Creek Preserve. So I, you know, I'm locked down, but I felt like taking a drive. And so I went and took a drive out there. And sure enough, there's this big pile of hundreds and hundreds of fluorescent tubes packed, you know, what is it, 8 or 10 to a box. And I'm looking around and thinking, you know, this is commercial waste. I'm just wondering if there's enough waste here, if in somewhere in all of this waste might be something that would identify who dumped this here. You know, you would think if you're going to go do something like that, you'd be very careful not to leave any trail behind. Well, I was just about to leave. I said, I'm going to take one last look. I flip over a box, and there's a FedEx shipping label, complete with the phone number of the shipper and the phone number of the company that was receiving them. The company that was shipping them was in Fullerton, California, and the receiver was in Tucson, Arizona. I picked up the phone, called Tucson, Arizona. I didn't get any answer. I called up Fullerton, and I got somebody on the line. And I said, hey, there is a pile of fluorescent tubes out here in the middle of the desert with your name all over it. And he says, oh, my gosh. And I'm going to go with I believe him. He said he pays to send these off. And he says, wow, the first thing he said to me is, wow, that's $4 a tube. And I said, well, you get $4 a tube to recycle these? He says, no, it cost me $4 a tube to recycle them. They have mercury in them. And so he paid, but the company he paid didn't take them to the recycle center. They just put the money in their pocket and deposited these things in the middle of the desert. So he said, that is not what our company does. We do not operate that way. And he said he's going to get after that company and go back and get that stuff picked up. And so for my purposes, I was really happy that they were going to get cleaned up. But just dang, interesting thing. Usually you don't catch somebody. You have to send a city crew out there. And then, of course, the city bears the expense of $4 a tube, and there's a lot of tubes out there. So that one's resolved, and that's good news. California Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments regarding pension reform. This is a case from, they're going to hear the oral arguments on May 5th, which I think is coming up soon. And what this has to do with is the Alameda County Deputy Sheriff's Association versus Alameda County Employees Retirement Association. And last year, the court decided that Cal Fire Local 2881 versus California Public Employees, that you couldn't do something that's called, known as airtime, which basically adds to your pension benefit. And the union argued that employees who were employed prior to some reforms that went through in the retirement system were vested in the way it was before, and thus are constitutionally protected. And that includes the airtime benefit. Now, what happens is under the California rule on pension benefits, you can basically buy more airtime to increase your retirement. Now, ultimately, the court ruled that airtime was not a vested pension benefit, for certain reasons, including that, it could not be considered deferred compensation for actual public service. This was buying service time, not actually serving service time. So now I don't know what's going to happen on this one, but the court's going to hear it. The California Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on May 5th. Stay tuned. But this has got a huge ramifications, you know. CalPERS, which is the state employees retirement system, is in a world of hurt right now because of the investments. And they were already looking at a lot of cities having to pony up a whole bunch more money to meet their pension obligations. And so this one would only add to it. And I think when they put in these reforms, the idea was is that, you know, this pension system is way too rich and we need to do something about that. So they put in a reform that says no more airtime, which is a good thing. Now, where am I at here? I got to get back to my notes. You know, last week I showed up here with the wrong reading glasses on, which made this a whole lot tougher to do. I take notes here. You can't go do a 2-hour show like this without getting some preparation done. In fact, you ever do a radio show, number one rule is prepare, because when you hit dead air time, you can only talk so long. And, you know, I did want to let you know, and I know I missed a couple of calls coming in because it was on a guest. I put out on social media, you can call in, and the last time I did that, the phone started ringing, all five lines lit up, and I got to a couple of them, and a couple of you later said, hey, I rang and rang and rang. Nobody answered. I didn't know if I had the right number. If you call in and it rings and rings and rings, I see it ringing. I just couldn't get to it. I had a guest on, and that was my mistake. I'm sorry, but feel free to call back. We'll put you on the air. Well, anything's fair game. 760-544-8255. And I did see your emails. I did ask a couple of them. A lot of you had the same question for Joe Wallace, and he was clear that their job isn't to tell everybody when they can get back to work. Their job is to put the protocols in place that the governor will accept. And if you missed that, you can catch that on podcast here on the Russ Bet Show. Go back and have a listen. And Google makes that real easy. All you got to do is go Google the Russ Bet Show podcast. And then it'll come up in the list. All the podcasts are there. You can also go to iHubRadio.com, which isn't too lengthy of a podcast email address for you to get to, but the other one actually takes you to the podcast. I just don't feel like reading it when Google can do it for me. Anyhow, so there you go. You know, you can catch this, and it's real easy to listen. The nice thing about this is you just, well, those of you listening know, most of you probably listening on your phone, playing in your pocket as you're going around your day. It's easy to get it on your computer, so maybe you're home kicking around the office listening. Anyhow, I hear from you, and I appreciate the comments, and so, you know, we'll get back on with this. Look at here, another city just came over. There's another city of plans to allow additional businesses to open, and this is California City, and They said they're not waiting. They've got too many people have lost too much money, and so the council directed their city manager to take interim steps to evaluate what can open and to get them going. So Governor Newsom sitting there taking a slow approach to this opening up, a slow, cautious, studied approach, and where science is going to dictate, not economics, and the science being the purpose of the science is to prevent deaths. But I think you got to take a look at some point in time at how many deaths are going to be caused by poverty. That's not something to be overlooked. So what they're saying is what they're saying is, look, folks, the ball's in your court. What you're going to do is get your business plan into the city manager ASAP, and that's the same as the other city we talked about earlier. If you want to open up, get us a plan so we can look at it. And it will be evaluated on the city council agenda for May 5th. So this is geared towards mostly small business owners. They were promised money, enough to keep their business alive. For most, it never happened. So apparently in California City, if you've got a plan to open your business, get it to us and go ahead. I don't know how the Coachella Valley cities are going to fare on this. Mostly they're right now laying low, and we'll see what happens. The League of California Cities has been doing a great job advocating for cities, and they had a question and answer session that, well, they've attended all of the webinars that the governor puts on his different various agencies, and the write-up is just fabulous. I'm gonna post this on the website so you can go and have a look at it. It's way too much to get into here. But they started asking the governor some questions, like, for example, there's been a lawsuit filed by Orange County residents. What is your reaction to this? And he says his answer is working to get these sanitations. Oh, what is this? Oh, and the other part of the question was about N95 masks in the Bay Area. Never ask two questions if you want a politician to answer one specifically, because the main answer was, well, we're going to get in. The question was about N95 masks and gloves that were being deposited everywhere. It's, you know, the new litter problem. And his answer was they are going to work on getting something in place to pick that stuff up. All right, we're out of time today. This is the Russ Bet Show on iHub Radio. Good to have you with us. Coming to you each and every Sunday morning from 10 a.m. till noon. And we're drawing on that noon hour now. Oh, wait a minute, I'm wrong. I got another segment ahead for you. That's good news, because I have some more in this stack to get to. But right now, we're going to get to some important messages. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs. Back with you in just a bit.
Read about it tomorrow. See you tonight. Hear it all day today. If it's happening in the Coachella Valley, it's front and center now on iHub Radio.
No way. That's incredible.
Now, here's Russ Betts.
All right, welcome back. I'm looking at some news here that regarding the tennis garden. You know, of course, they had to cancel the match early on. It was the first big cancellation in the Valley, but... it looks like there's a major event now that's going to be coming to the Coachella Valley, the U.S. Open tennis tournament that's now that takes place in New York every year. But that's making a move to the West Coast and the tennis gardens. So, that's good news. All right. I've been watching. Everywhere you listen, the governor's plan to reopen put in his four stages of opening, and stage three was, you know, the dangerous hair salons is what he even called them out specifically. And then I'm listening to the national feed coming in here to the station, and I see somebody else seem to mention that, you know, well, hair salons are a pretty dangerous thing. And I picked up on this little... you go look around and see some of these protests going on. And, of course, one of the signs caught my eye. Shows a picture, you know, line drawing of Gavin Newsom. But then the sign reads, "Open hair salons or you will be the one having a bad hair day." And it's got this little old lady, you know, carrying the sign. Or an elderly lady, not a little old lady, but an elderly lady carrying the sign. Obviously, she wants to get her hair done. So that's out there. But, you know, on a more serious note, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at, we own a hair salon, so maybe this is a little bit self-serving, but it's also educational to let you know what goes on. And you got a lot of businesses out there going, we can open safely, and we've gone 2 months without income. And, you know, cosmetology licensing in California is among the most stringent in the nation. And it includes in-depth training in sanitation, disinfection, and infection control. And that's done over many months of course study. It takes a year of course study, before you can get licensed to become a cosmetologist and open up a salon and operate in a salon. And these standards apply to not just the cosmetologists, but the salon owners and barbers too. They have to meet the same sterilization standards as, you know, federal and state laws for client safety, those that match medical and dental offices. You know, the constant emphasis is on equipment sterilization and the spread of infectious diseases to the public. And maintenance of the license is dependent on this strict adherence. The state sends out inspectors, surprise spot inspections, and you better have your sanitation protocols in place. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, cosmetologists also provide a front line on early identification of some serious medical conditions and diseases that, if they're left undetected, can lead to serious health impacts. And obviously, cosmetologists aren't healthcare professionals, but it's not uncommon for cosmetologists to be the first to notice, for example, a skin cancer in the tops of ears or the scalp above the hairline. You know, hey, I'm noticing something here. You need to see a doctor about that. And a lot of skin cancers mimic dandruff. And I don't want to get too technical here in the show here. I mean, it's not supposed to be a show about hair salons, but somebody's got to make the case that, you know, when you're talking about hair salons, it needs to be an intelligent, informed discussion. Not the, you know, a hair salon isn't just a fun place you go to get a haircut, which it is. You know, everybody loves to go get their haircut. It's amazing to watch the people who just like to come in and get a haircut. It's, you know, look, remember Floyd the barber in Andy Mayberry's show? The barbershop was a place to meet and greet and talk to people. So, you know, cosmetologists know their clients also in ways that other professions don't. You know, everybody tells lots of stuff to their hairstylist. And, you know, with this time when everybody's stressed out and cooped up and having problems, it may just be the hairstylist. It's also the first one to notice that, you know, there may be some, you know, social issue here going on that might, you know, somebody may be at significant social risk. So obviously COVID-19 presents a different and new challenge to cosmetologists and salon owners, but they are well suited by their professional training and the protocols they have in place now to address that, much more so than a lot of the businesses presently having contact with the public. They're not going to have to be trained how to be safe when they're in contact with customers because they do that every day as the regular course of their business. So, you know, there needs to be this realization by the local county and state agencies that either, you know, if you're going to keep them closed for 2 months, like the governor's talking, the article out in the Sacramento Bee says 2 more months, not just before you can get a haircut at a salon, but before that salon can open, well, there better be some emphasis on some real help, because I know there's salon owners that can't go that long before they are just flat out of business, broke, unemployed, losing their houses, landlord saying, sorry, get out of your space. And, you know, why are they carrying such a heavy burden with no help? And, you know, I've got a few cosmetologists, I know one in our family, who's looking at Governor Gavin Newsom, and I don't happen to see that he's passed on a haircut. Take a look. I mean, he's known for his hair, and it doesn't seem like he's got 2 months worth of not getting a haircut. So where's he getting his hair done? And, you know, somebody, I was sitting there listening to one of these talk shows, another talk show, and the guy says they want to call and report Nancy Pelosi because she's obviously getting her hair done and she's a California resident. You know, if this is going to apply to everybody, it needs to apply to everybody evenly. You had George Bush, former President George Bush, talking about how we all have to be in this together. Well, he's got a net worth of $39 million, so it's real nice to sit home in your mansion and say, we're all going to be in this together. You know, what do you need $39 million for? You know, we want to spread some of that around, maybe send it off to some hair salons. It wouldn't be hard. You know, send them $100 each. Pick out every salon. I mean, you wouldn't even be breathing hard to send that much. Maybe I'm getting off into the point of ridiculousness here, and you can hear that I'm a little frustrated about this, but... you know, it's not just hair salons. It's a lot of people that are really, really hurting right now, and they need to get back to work and be able to do it safely, and they can. And so, all right, and the good news is we've got things like the county task force, the county supervisors doing a real good job to be proactive and get these guidelines in place. I know there's different cities that are looking at the same thing. I just went through it with a hairstylist or cosmetologist in our city to come up with, you know, additional protocols, and we came up with 15 of them, in addition to the protocols that are already in place. All customers must wear a mask to enter the salon. All customers must sanitize their hands. All customers entering the salon will be required to be the only one in there. Don't bring your family and friends. The only one person getting a haircut is, you know, anyhow, it's a big, long list. I don't know where we're heading. I certainly appreciate the seriousness of the virus, but the economic devastation coming, it looks on the horizon for so many people. We're in a changed world, and the sooner we can get the economy open to back up, the less we can mitigate the problems from all of that. All right, we're back here with you next Sunday for the more of the... updates on where things stand. We'll try and get back to a little bit more on local government. That's what we're supposed to do here, but obviously this thing is so overwhelming. And I'm at the end of 2 hours and losing my voice now, so that's it. We're done. This is Russ Betts on iHub Radio in beautiful downtown Palm Springs.